Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Hello, everybody. Good night, good evening, good day, wherever you are. I hope that it is good. It is good for me, and it is good because I know a wonderful God who has been a wonderful friend for many years, and it is my hope that through this show, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you might be facing in your life, that you take on the motto, which is don't give up, whether it's on a dream, whether it's on your life, to know that the God that created us has a plan and a purpose for your life. And tonight, we have an extra special guest who's going to share with us exactly how purpose became very clearly defined in his life, and he was able to really focus on what God has for him and step into life in a bigger and better way, and that is Dr. Braxton Cosby, and all of us know of Dr. Bill Cosby of The Cosby Show, and this is his nephew, and he is going to be sharing with us. I'm really going to be spending a lot of time talking about him as author and the books that he has wonderfully created, very, very creative books, sci-fi, romance, all of that's in there, and you'll get to hear about a little bit about that later on. But he is not only author, he is producer, he is radio host. He has a, you know, Cosby Media Productions, and we'll get to hear about that as well later on. So, everybody, welcome, Braxton. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really, really appreciate it. So happy to be here.
Well, I'm humbled and really grateful that you were able to join us. I was really excited when I stumbled across your page on Amazon, and then I found your website, and then I was even more excited when I found out that you were excited about God as well, excited about doing things for him, and I said I had to reach out to you and see where if we could have you on the show. So one of the things I want to do right away is I like to establish, you know, who you are. And, you know, our past has a lot to do with informing who we are today. It doesn't have to by any means keep us in a mold, but it does inform certain things. So why don't you talk to us about your childhood a little bit, growing up, you know, the pros and cons. Who were you? What was your family like?
It was me and my brother. I just have one sibling. He's an older brother, and live with my mom, single parent home with my grandmother. And that was pretty much life for us, was, you know, two ladies trying to raise two boys. And we lived in Miami, Liberty City at the time. And I, even though we lived in the quote-unquote ghetto, I never felt poor because my grandmother and my mom did everything they could to give us everything that we wanted, you know. So, you know, it may have taken some time to get some things, but realistically, eventually, what we wanted, we would eventually have. Even if it took all the way until Christmas, we still got it, and I was always grateful and blessed because of that. Growing up in the inner city, you know, you see a lot, you're exposed to a lot. There's just a lot of decisions that you have to make on a daily basis of either yay or nay, you know. The decision put before you, either go with it or you don't. And the one thing that always echoed in the back of my mind was that I didn't want to embarrass my mother or my grandmother. And that was based on the hard work that I saw them put forth to provide these things for me and my brother. I was dedicated not to torpedoing any of their efforts by making the wrong decision. So it took a few times of having to walk away from some fights, some confrontations, turning some things down, opportunities to, you know, just do what kids would get into if you're stealing or you're lying or anything like that. I just walked away from a lot of that stuff just because I wanted to honor them as much as I could. I didn't want to be a problem for them because I knew how hard they were working. So that was my household. As far as the friends I ran with, I didn't have it wasn't a big group of us. It was a very close-knit group of friends that we had. And I'm still friends with those guys today. And we just had a great time just really sitting around. We were simple kids, and I think that's what helped us out is that we really got high off of life, just being together and laughing and having a good time creating. I didn't have to try to find drugs or anything extra to be happy. You know, I was literally just happy just being with my friends. So I'm grateful because of that.
I think those are really great things that you brought out because, you know, I myself am a single family household and I have two girls and a boy. And I find, you know, one of the things that made things very or much easier with my son is the fact that he has a core group of guy friends that all the moms know each other, and they're either at one of our houses, and you know, like, it's simple, you play basketball, but they also created a force field for themselves, so they've always been there to watch each other's back, so to speak, and to make sure one doesn't get into this altercation or make that bad decision. And so it really is helpful to have a good core of friends that are going to support you and move through. And I loved what you said about mom and grandma being able to provide for you despite difficult times, despite living in low-income areas, because waiting for things, it actually is a good thing to learn when you're growing up. And it helps you to appreciate and to value things even more.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of the kids nowadays get things almost instantaneously, even when they are living in a low-income home. So it's really a value system to learn that it's better to save up for it. It's better to earn it. It's better to, you know, really appreciate it. Now, you're living in this, you know, low-income lifestyle, but you have a famous uncle who's on television and everyone knows him. How did you reconcile that? How did that work for you?
I think it was cool. It was one day I was sitting there looking at the Cosby Show, and I remember my mom was like, "Oh, you know that's your uncle, right?" And I'm like, "Who?" And she's like, "Bill Cosby." I'm like, "Oh, really? Oh, that's cool." And I didn't put that in the show because I was a fan of the show. I heard him. Understand that it didn't resonate with me. It didn't really mean anything on this next level. It was just I was looking at a great show that I enjoyed, and it was great to think that hey, that guy's related to me. Great. So what does that mean? Because I was already somewhat content with family, you know, that I had. So it really wasn't a big thing. And the more accomplishments he made, and the more of a contribution he gave to the world, the bigger it got to me then. But it wasn't about being starstruck. I don't know if kids get starstruck, at least not when I was growing up on that level anymore. It was just more like, wow, that's pretty cool. And oh, by the way, he's doing some fantastic things. So I'm always a trailblazer, always a pioneer of what he's doing, his brand, and making it his own, and bringing his own identity to the intellectual property he was developing, which was basically around himself back then. You know, the Cosby Show took some time to build, and a lot of it was based on just what was maybe necessary for the marketplace at the time, and the focus had to be him. I remember my wife asked me the other day, she's like, you know, it's funny, it was the Cosby Show, but they were the Huxtables. I was like, and yeah, it's ironic that, you know, the show wasn't called the Huxtables, but the bottom line was that this was about going to see Bill Cosby, you know, and you really didn't even care what the name of the characters were. You were going to see Bill Cosby and the stories that he told. He was already telling these stories on stage. So great influence for me, great opportunity to see somebody who was doing this thing, and there's such a rich history behind him getting to where he has gotten to, and the hard work and the effort that he's put forth. So a lot of appreciation for that. And really just knowing that these are real people who go through real trying times with real investments of their time and their dreams and to get to where they go. And basically you can say, like, man, you know what? This is definitely possible. You know, so very inspirational.
Well, I want to ask you about that last piece because, you know, one of the things, I grew up in that era as well, and I actually went to one of the live tapings. It was the episode where Denise made the lopsided shirt for Kadeem Hardison, And
the Gordon Gottrell shirt.
Yes, exactly. And I have this whole thing that I wrote. It's an article called "I Could Have Been a Cosby Kid." It's quite hilarious. But one of the things that I noticed is that I identified with the show and the characters as something being possible, because even though I was low income as well, there was something about the values by which my mom was raising me where I just believed certain things were possible. But there was this other undertone, backlash kind of thing that felt like that's not a realistic family. You know, most of us are just struggling to get by in Black America. This isn't realistic. But how did that paint a picture of your possibility when you saw that?
I think it was,
you know, to me it was, I tried, you know, it's surreal because it's a family member of yours. So you're not looking at it as if you're starstruck, but you know this person is a mega star. So I didn't ever think of, can I get to where he is as a comedian? I wasn't looking at him from the entertainment perspective. I was looking at it from a perspective of, could I be a doctor one day? You know what I mean? So that was really, and I think that people connected with that. That's what was real to them, was not, could I be a star? It was, could I be a doctor? Could I really have a wife? Could have a higher degree?
Lawyer. Yeah, exactly.
I think those
are the big pieces, you know. Those are the things that I was looking at. So that was the question I was asking, not could I be a star?
Exactly. And I think that's what it was, and why it's still such a resonating show today as a classic. I want to get to you personally, knowing that you are a man of God, how did you come into your relationship with Jesus Christ? Where did your faith begin to form?
Well, I grew up in an AME, church, African Methodist Episcopal Church down in Miami. Initially, single-parent home, my mom, she wasn't Catholic, but she took us to Mass on Saturdays because it was a convenience thing. It was 45 minutes. You can get the boys in and out. Didn't have to have the attention span too long. So we just kind of went. We were just being religious. We were just practicing whatever they told us to do. When we got there, we did, and we left. So that was like my Saturdays. And it was great because Saturday night, that way I didn't wake up on Sunday and I had to worry about going to church. So my grandmother was always going to African AME church. So we went with her. Every now and then, but man, that was long. It was like 2.5 hours. We knew if we went, it was going to be awful because we had to sit there that long. So my grandmother was very, very dedicated woman to God, would read her Bible every day, and she would always have these little quotes every now and then. She'd say something, Philippians 4:13, and you'd be sitting there like, what is she talking about, you know? So she would always quote from the Bible these things, dash bread upon water after many days return to you. So you would just hear, it would be undownloaded, you know, as I look back. And she was just speaking life onto me. Mm-hmm. So what happened is those seeds were being sown, and then I went to do an internship, really a clinical following. And my uncle wanted me to go and kind of follow these chiropractors out in California and see how they were doing their business. I think from a business sense, it was just a matter of the exposure and seeing how businesses run and things like that. So I went there for like 3 weeks and was hanging with them and seeing how they were doing things. And there was one lady who just always would go out to her car during lunchtime, and I didn't know what she was doing. And one day I went out there, and I saw she was reading the Bible. And I'm like, hey, oh, you're out here in the Bible? She's like, yeah. And we just kind of chatted about God, and she was like, so are you saved? I'm like, no. I said, I'm not really ready for that right now because, you know, some things I want to do, and I want to make sure when I do it right. I want to do it perfect. And I know that was just my philosophy back then. And she said, well, you know, you don't have to be perfect to get saved. And I'm like, well, and I hate to do things, you know, halfway. I don't want to just say I'm a Christian and not be dedicated to it. I know that my mind is not ready. And she basically just had a real heart-to-heart conversation with me about, well, you know, if God came back now, what would happen to me? And I was like, well, wouldn't he forgive me? Like, well, no, if you haven't asked him to come into your life, then you haven't gotten that rite of passage, so you would be left out. And I'm like, but he loves me. Why would he do that? And she said, well, that's just the way it goes. You know, these are the things he said in his Bible. So it scared me. I was just really scared. I didn't want to die and not make it. I said, well, what happens if I get saved and I can't be perfect? He said, you never have to. You know, you have to dedicate yourself to committing and trying to be better. And that's what God wants you to do.
but he doesn't need you to be perfect.
Right.
So I basically was like, so I just do this whole thing. And she kind of just talked to me about, you know, getting saved. So I went back home that summer with a friend of mine, and we both got saved. And that was, I was 19 years old. And I just remember saying, like, wow, so I'm really going to, you know, dedicate myself. And he was, you know, same kind of like mine. And we were just like iron sharpening iron. We were both going to just kind of do it together and hold each other. So that was when I did it. And I haven't looked back since then.
That's awesome, awesome. Yeah, I was 19 as well after growing up in a, you know, well, being sent to church, basically. But there's something very tangible about that woman's lifestyle, because here she is just reading consistently. You see that in her, and you ask her about her faith, and she just talks to you. And she was very honest about the realities of things, and I want those who are listening tonight to really understand what she's saying is simply Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And in Matthew 24:36, it says, no man knows the day or the hour. So now is the acceptable time, the acceptable day of salvation. And I too have a lot of friends who feel like they need to wait, they need to get themselves together first, but that's why we need his perfection and his power, because he's the one who gets us together. We can't do it of our own accord, and that's the beauty of his wonderful, amazing grace. And I'm just really thankful that you were able to come into that, and it would be wonderful if those of you who are listening understand that before you can make any really strong strides in understanding your purpose and why you're here on this planet. It's the very first step is to get to know the one who is waiting for you to ask him into your heart.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but amazing grace, how sweet.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. We all know that song very well. You are listening to Don't Give Up Radio, and this is your host, Jackie Wayne. And we're talking with Braxton Cosby, who's been sharing with us a bit about his life growing up and how he came to know the Lord personally. And as we know, in every life, it sounds cliche, but the reality is a little rain must fall. And you have one of your books entitled Broken Prince. And when I saw the title, I thought to myself, you know, that word broken says so much, it means so much. Talk to me about a broken place, a broken time in your life, and how the Lord was able to get you through that, because that's really the crux of what this show is about. And to hear, sometimes when you're going through something, you think you're the only one in the world. So to know that there's someone else who has been there and who has made it through, I always say God is no respecter of a person. So if he did it for you, he'll do it for the person who's listening. So can you share something with us?
Yeah, it was a time in my track career, running track in college. I had transferred to LSU for a year. I had done really well while I was at University of Miami, and decided I wanted to blue chain and try something different. So I went out to LSU on a full scholarship. I was very grateful. And it was the fall of 97, I think it was. And fall of 96, went out there. And I remember basically that I got the news in the winter, actually, that my cousin Ennis was murdered. Mm-hmm. And, like, I remember the guy at the front desk, and I was checking him, like, hey, man, aren't you Cosby nephew? You know your cousin dead. And I'm like, I mean, it was like, you know, one of these things where people just don't know how to deliver news worth anything.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And I, you know, wondering if he was joking or not when I saw that, and then it came right on the TV, and it just broke me. So, you know, I was broken at the time, I said, well, you know what, Lord, I'm going to dedicate the season to Ennis. And I remember writing his name on my shoes and just getting ready to compete, and I actually went out and got injured that same weekend.
Well, actually, I'm going to pause and just back you up a little bit because, you know, that moment was, I can only imagine how powerful it was for you because I know how much it resonated with myself and so many of my coworkers and colleagues. When you say it broke you, what were the things that went through your mind as a male, as a black male, as just a family person? What was it? I'm sure it was multi-layered. So if you could just kind of slow that moment down a little bit and talk to us. Yeah.
Well, it was, like you said, so many layers. One is that you have questions. You're trying to figure out why and how with somebody, you know. To take a life, to me, is one of the I think it's one of these moments where something in the universe just snaps. That's just what I believe. I believe that it's one of the most powerful moments in time is to take someone's life, because this is something, you know, God breathed life into people. And for you to take somebody else's life, to me, is just such a tragic moment. So to me, it felt like my life had literally stopped for a while, and the only thing I was trying to do was to clench onto something to give meaning, which was, you know, trying to dedicate my life to Ennis. But I think also on another level, you know, a family member, not just a life, but a family member is gone, and now you've got to try to figure out, well, where do you go from here, and how do you move on, and what are the things that you say to people? How do you say anything to anybody else? And, you know, I remember just trying to think, if I had the dialogue with my uncle and my aunt, what could I possibly say? And, you know, being a parent now, I definitely know that there was really nothing you can say when something like that happened. So it was very tragic. It was terrible. There were ridiculous circumstances behind it. The questions, you know, there's questions without answers, and it's you just feel hopeless.
And so you decide that the one place you could kind of take some power and try to make this mean something is by dedicating your sports year, your year as a track runner to Ennis. And how did that go?
And the same weekend I got injured, actually tore my hamstring and was pretty much out for the rest of the season. I remember going back to my dorm room when we got back in town. We had traveled to Texas, but we came back to town, and I remember my leg just throbbing. And I get off the bus. I had to walk to my dorm, and that was about maybe a good 10, 15-minute walk, and I'm just walking on the campus, leg hurting, and all of this is just running through my mind, and you play how I got hurt, how, you know, and it's murdered, the whole thing, and season down the drain. And get back to my room, and then find out I had left one of my bags back at the track, which had my key to get inside my room. So it was like, you know, like just being poured on now. You know, everything's just getting worse.
Right.
Nothing's getting better. And I remember finally getting my key and getting out of my room and going, just kind of plunging myself into the bed. And when I went to sleep, I remember waking up and my leg wasn't hurting.
Okay.
Now, definitely, I wasn't healed, but physically, I didn't feel the pain anymore.
Okay.
And that was the moment I felt like God spoke to me. And he said, you know, each day that you wake up is a day that you can actually go out and do something else about any circumstance you're in. It's a reset. You don't have to be stuck in anything, any circumstances you had that night before. You can actually start all over again. And I just felt so encouraged by that.
That is an extremely powerful statement, and it's very true. Can you just say it again? Because I want to make sure people heard it the way you said it. No, really, that is because we take so much for granted, and it's true. When you wake up for another day, it is God is actually trying to impart something to you. Say it again. I want to hear it again.
God just spoke to me and encouraged me that every morning that morning I woke up, that every day you have given to you is another opportunity to do something different with your life and incredible. And you're not just stuck in the circumstances that you were in when you went to sleep. You know, that's why I believe people on drugs, any addictions, any circumstances that they're in poverty, I mean, you have another day, and if you can just dedicate that day to God and his purpose and his will, you have the power to change the circumstances. The next day, you don't have to be who you thought you were the day before.
You know, it is really amazing to me the difference that a night makes from when you lay your head down on a pillow. All the cares and all the worries and the burdens of your day or of your life is really weighing on you in that moment. You know, that's where all the fear, feelings of being alone tend to hit you. And if you can just hold on till the morning, it sounds cliche, but it's true. Stay dawned and you get out of that bed and you start again, there's something fresh there. The key, though, is having the Lord to hold on to and him being the strength that you need to get you through to the next day. I started the radio show with another program called Songs for the Midnight Hour because I understood that was a crucial time when people were searching for answers and the torment almost seems to get you. And I definitely want to hear about how the Lord brought you out of this time in your life. But when you were there in that moment, you know, you got the horrendous news. You that same weekend, you tear your ligament. You're out of it for the rest of the competition, and it just seems like everything's mounting. What are some of the things that came across your mind, and how did you fight that or resist that?
It just started with that, and I just kept reminding myself that it was going to take baby steps, that I wasn't going to get it all back in one day. So I just, I went in and I had to trust in the process. You know, I let the trainers work on me. I asked them specifically exactly what I can do, what I should do. And I think there was a lot of learning and understanding that systems are in place. Provision has been provided. And when you've done all you can and when you kind of run out of options, it's best to just sit back and just trust. So that was, my injury was parallel in my relationship with God at that point. I basically didn't have anybody out in Louisiana with me. I was there by myself. My family was still back in Miami. And realistically, all I could do was try to just relax and allow whatever process was in place for my healing to happen. And the same thing with God, whatever God was doing, I had to trust that what he was doing had purpose. I had to trust that what he was doing was meaningful, and that in some way it was going to be positive, and it was going to work out in my favor in the end. Even when I couldn't see how it could be, I had to just trust.
And that's where we come to that place of really needing God and being very vulnerable in front of him and just asking him to show us who he is and to be our strength. And I'm just going to play another selection now. And if that's you, please take the moment as this song plays to just say, you know, I need you. And God is really faithful to come in at the point of your need and fill that void.
My heart and my flesh cries out for the living God, for the living God. Incline your ear, the trembling and tears of yearning. To the throne of grace, to see your face, I'm burning and longing for you. da 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 da.
Simple. That's beautiful to be able to cry out, I need you, and to know that God that created you will be more than happy to show himself strong and reveal himself to you. We are talking with Braxton Cosby tonight, and he is sharing with us about his own life and journey. And this backstory is leading us right into your books and all of your production and your various work. Can you just run down, anchor us solidly in terms of all that you do? So starting with, you know, what you got your degree in to what God has opened the door for you to be able to do on top of that.
Okay. I got my bachelor's in health science, got my master's in physical therapy, also my doctor in physical therapy. So people say, how do you make the transition from that into what I'm doing also now? And I really tell people, first and foremost, I've always been an artist. I always love beautiful things. I always like to create, to sculpt, to just put on paper or to make visible what was in my head. So I always wanted to do that. Physical therapy to me was the culmination of being able to help and be. I'm very goal-oriented. So if people had a goal, hey, what do you want to be able to do? How can I help you? So I'm still creative. I'm always thinking of new exercises, new ways to help people accomplish their goals, new ways to, you know, help them to substitute for things that they might not be able to do, to maybe, you know, create plans that will help people maintain what they have. So there's a lot of creativity that goes into that. But I think God wanted to always return me back to the place of origin of actually creating on my own and to put things into play that were always in my head. I've always been a movie watcher. I love good stories. And I think that I can always appreciate a good story and a good movie. So when God actually called me to be a writer in church one day, the bishop was speaking and he said that God was telling him that there were people that he wanted to use to maybe do something that they had never done before, but nobody was asking, and could we take the time to pray? So I started praying right there in the pews, like, well, God, what would you have me do? And I specifically heard a voice say, I want you to write a book. And I was like, okay, about what? And he said, all those movies you've ever seen, Brex, and all those stories that you loved, when you would leave the theater and say, man, it was great, but if they had just done this or maybe if they had just done that, all those movies, take them and put them in your book. And I said, okay. And he said, I said, what are we talking about, God? And he said, I want you to write a romance story. I want you to write this story that has romance, but it has action and it has drama to it. And he wants to just speak to young people about the value of relationships in which you can just be happy just being with somebody. And it's not based on what you can get from them or what they can get from you. And the idea of even, you know, running the star-crossed lovers scene through there, where this is really about two people who, not that they don't want to be with each other, but there may be time and space is tearing them apart from each other as well. And the only thing that would be strong enough to keep them together is love. So the book is you know, Protostar is as part of it's book one of a 3-book series.
Right.
And it really is anchored on love, because when you read the Bible, and I think even when you become a parent, you understand what that unconditional love is about. And you understand that really love is the most powerful thing in the universe, and it's a magnificent thing. And the appreciation for what God's love is like us, you understand that when you look at your kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do that. I wanted to give that, and I really felt like back in, I think it was 2012, God said that he was going to call me to a place of a healer. He wanted me to use my books that I write to heal people and also use my hands. So I continued to stay in therapy, but I have now matriculated into writing these books and these stories and creating things that really speak. So, and I really feel that was out of the gifts that came from my uncle. I matriculated down from him, being a storyteller, writing, being able to visualize and see things and make it real for other people when they read it, or if I talk about it, they can actually see what I'm seeing. So that was my thing, is to make sure that if I saw it, that somebody who read it would see exactly what I was seeing. And I've been hearing that. That's what people have been, you know, it's so vivid. I was like, I was right there. And I know that that's just a God gift, but it's also something that was instilled in me. So Cosby Media Productions was a perfect kind of culmination to bring everything together, because when I look at myself, author, actor, entrepreneur, then a CEO of a company that actually is a full-service entertainment company that does not only music, not only print books, not only TV and film, but even consulting, that was an expression of me. If I'm an author, actor, entrepreneur, and I'm creating, then these stories that go into film, print, music, and everything will come from me, from the gifts that I have. So I'm grateful. We've made a lot of strides very quickly. We have relationships where we're able to get our content into the marketplace for people to be able to consume and enjoy. And I know that it was God breathed, because the way it's moving, the speed at which it's moving, and we're committed to the Cosby brand only in the fact that it's family-friendly content. You know, if
right.
people come to see it, they're not going to hear Bill Cosby jokes. They're not going to see what
right.
he wrote. It's going to be my stuff, but the brand of itself, just being family friendly, and when you have your kids read it or you read it, you're going to see that it is something that everyone can enjoy, and that's what I think Cosby did. I think he entertained. I think he encouraged, he educated, and he inspired, and that's exactly what we want to do with the company going forward.
Right, and you say we, because you are also, I say, smart enough to realize you can't do all of this by yourself and raise
right,
a family
right.
and have a healthy marriage, because I'm sure, you know, you put the values in the correct order as having God first,
of
then
course.
Family and career. So you brought in your cousin Leon Cosby to
yes.
be a part of the production as well, and it's so good to have a partner and someone who's, you know, on the like mind with you, who can, you know, share the vision and help carry it forward. I wanted to go back
yeah.
to the books a little bit. Give us all the titles that you've produced so far.
Okay. So Broken Prince is the prequel to the Star-Crossed Saga trilogy. And Broken Prince really just talks about the main character, William, and how he kind of got started. He's a prince from another planet, and he wanted to become a bounty hunter all his life, but he's also a prince, so he feels as if he's been coddled, and everybody in the planet has kind of just worshipped him and allowed him to do what he wants to do, and he's only gotten everywhere just because he's the prince. So he went on this mission to kind of prove himself, and when he got out in the realness of being in war and all the planning and tragedy that comes with that, the realness broke him. So I won't give the whole story away, but it's just a good way for people to connect with William before they get to Protostar, which is the first book in the series. And, you know, basically he's this bounty hunter that gets on a mission to go and kill the Star Child, who is actually an offspring of the sun on our planet. And basically it's a story that's out of prejudice and assumptions, because if the Star Children get their powers to come to fruition, what would they ever do with them? And people assume that they would do something evil. And he has to go. He wants to prove himself. So this is his big mission. He'll go and kill this girl. The more he hangs around her, the more he starts to develop feelings for her. And now he has to choose. And that's the line from the book is, what would you choose, love or duty? And he has to make a decision. You know, basically, will he bring shame to his family by not going through with the mission, or will he choose love and what he's feeling new? So obviously it's a trilogy, so you got to see how he makes the choice he makes. And it's doing really well right now. We've got a lot of the bookstores. The book is going to, you know, if it's not in your local Barnes & Noble now, within the next month, it will definitely be everywhere nationwide. And people are reviewing it and just raving over it. It's won Reader's Favorite Book of the Year Award for sci-fi romance. And I'm just very proud of what God has done with it, because it's something he instilled with me way back in 2011. And also the other book I have, which is the Christian fiction, is The School of Ministry. The first book in that series is called The Wingate. And that just covers the story of a young man named Ziv, who actually lives in Atlanta.
He's recruited by a secret society who has dedicated themselves to hunting down the evil and protecting the weak. And he has spiritual gifts that they're going to help hone and train his gifts. And there's a lot of great action and a lot of twists. I got a double, let's see if I can say this right, a double love triangle where, you know, Zim has to decide the love of his life and the new woman who's in his life now, and then she's got somebody that she likes. So, you know, all this good stuff. And, yeah, the stories are very, they're very well crafted.
You're definitely keeping it interesting for, I hear guy readers, I hear young readers, you know, and I hear older readers too.
Yeah.
Do you think because it's sci-fi and romance and so much fiction is brought into it, even though you've got, I can hear some nice, strong, you know, Bible themes in there, do you think it's something that you might have some people being a little leery or a little scared to touch it because they don't know where you might be going?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of people who don't read sci-fi who review it, and they'll go, I'm not a sci-fi reader, but let me tell you, this was not over my head. I can digest it. I read it. I understood it. And then when you get down to it, to me, the reason I love sci-fi the most is two reasons. One is that science fiction traditionally has always been about differences and different characters. And, you know, you've got one alien from one planet, one alien from another planet, and you've always had these differences, but somehow for a common goal, these characters get together and they make it work. And I think that parallels our society, that we have our differences, we can be different. And if you can give a story that creates characters that have meaning and are endearing, people look past the sci-fi stuff. I mean, the sci-fi stuff is great for people like me who just enjoy the science and the action and the stuff, but at the end of the day, even if you get the most diehard person who doesn't know anything about sci-fi, they can get into it because the characters, as long as they have weight, they'll get into it. The other thing I think is that I tell people all the time, I believe God is the great mad scientist. You know, he is sci-fi. I mean, we are walking science fiction projects. You know,
right.
I mean, who knows? Whoever thought that from one cell, zillions of cells will spawn, and then you would actually have people just walking around. You know, he breathed breath into you. This is Frankenstein, you know what I mean? So we have all these things, but God is a mad scientist, and he's very proud of his creation because it makes absolutely no sense that we exist, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people, I say, hey, man, you talk about you don't like science fiction. You need to talk that up with God because he is the great mad scientist, and he's been doing it for years, and he will continue to do it, you know? So I'm fascinated with sci-fi. I love the stories, and I think that this is my opportunity to play out what's in my mind. And at the end of the day, there's a great chance that people will glean something that's real, because I do write from my experiences as well in the stories. I think the things that are important to me are fashioned in these stories as well, my relationships, my experiences. And I, as like my uncle used to say, when you look at Fat Albert, if you're not careful, you may learn something, you know? So I'm conscious of that in my writing too. You know, I'm like, hey, once you get through reading it, if you sit back and you think and you ponder on the storyline, you might be like, man, this dude was really on some other level stuff where he was really trying to download a message here, but I got so caught up in everything else that it snuck up on me, you know. And that's my goal, is to make sure that I don't want to be cliche. As soon as I feel like the story is going cliche, I go the opposite way. So you'll be guaranteed that when you're reading the book, you're going to get a story that's fresh that you haven't read anywhere else. And the minute it gets cliche, just get ready, because the whammy is coming, and it's going to turn very different very quickly.
Wow. I'd love to see your stuff in public schools. You know, part of my day job, I work with this website to help parents navigate the New York City public school system, and we have to visit the schools. And, you know, a lot of the novels that they have these young people reading are just not age-appropriate, you know? And
yeah,
you can get rich, creative, wonderful characters that are, you know, again, not abusing drugs. And I mean, there's definitely that it's time for that, you know, biographies where you get to see life lessons learned and things like that. But a lot of this stuff is actually not in that genre. It's just, you know, salacious. And the idea is just get kids reading. But a book like yours sounds like a book that really should be in every school library and every public library. I really wish you success. Our time is winding down so quickly, but I have a question because I'm listening to you. I'm listening to how engaged you are about the books. how much of yourself, because as writers, you know, I've written myself, how much of yourself do you put in these characters, and you know, how do you choose who gets what piece of you, you know, inside of it? Is it intentional when you check it out, or does it just happen?
You know, my characters write themselves. I got to be honest. I start off with my chapter outlines are probably like a sentence or two long. And then I take the character and I see what the focus is going to be. And then the characters write themselves. When they start having some of these dialogues, when I go back into the editing process, I'm like, man, who wrote this stuff? they're just talking. And they're just having a natural dialogue. You know, they're having a natural dialogue. And I wouldn't say that, I guess if I'm in it, it's just that I'm a collection of experiences. So my experiences are in it. And even people who I meet, and they tell me they have a great story, I take their stories and put them in. I met a World War II veteran who gave me this amazing story about how he got captured in the war and he was gone for 4 months. His wife was still writing, believing that he was going to come back home. And I said, how did you keep your sanity? You know, not knowing if this was the last time you were going to wake up, you know. And so those types of things I wanted to capture. So that's actually in one of my books as well, the whole story about how one of the characters gets captured and then he gets free stuff. Those things, I think, just have to continue to be in there. And that's where storytelling comes out, and that's where people really can connect, because I just want my stories to feel real. Even though they're fiction, I want people to feel it and understand it and say, man, you know what, this could happen. And it already has happened, because it's happened to me somewhere, you know, and I'm hoping that the connection is always there when people read.
What would you say is the running theme or takeaway from the books you create?
If it's Protostar, it's love and accountability. I want young people to be accountable for their actions. You know, William has to make a big decision, and he's accountable to it. He stands up for it. He says, this is what I'm doing, regardless of what people say, this is what I feel is right, and this is what I'm doing. So there's accountability. I want young people to get that. The school of ministry, the Wingate, I want people to get, the young people especially, to get encouraged and to find their identity. That book is about identity. It's about saying, hey, this is who I am. I found out who I am. I'm proud of who I am, and I'm going to walk in the destiny of what this is. So that would be my summary for those two books. I have other books that are coming this year, autobiography with a young producer, musician named Mike Clements, who has a fantastic story that we've written. I also have I'm doing an autobiography with Gail Devers, an Olympic sprinter who's done running now and going into her story, which is just amazing. So people are going to just continue to get a little bit of everything from me this year. What God will give me, I will put out. And I'm just, I'm inspired because Cosmeta Productions is here to stay. And these stories that we're writing are going to be the same things we'll be showing in film and TV. So I'm really, really encouraged by that.
Sounds exciting. Tell the people where they can find you and your products.
All right. If they want to catch up with me, just go to BraxtonCosby.com. You want to catch up with me on Twitter, it's at Braxton A. Cosby. You can also go to Cosby Media Productions with a S.com. And if you want any of my books, they'll all be on those pages, but you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and you can find The School of Ministry, the first book called The Wingate, and you can also find Protostar, book one of the Star-Crossed Trilogy, in stores as well.
And real quick, you're also working on a movie called The Snare that's going to have one of the Baldwin brothers as the main character.
Yes.
How's it coming along?
Going well. We should be finishing up filming sometime late summer, fall, and that's kind of this whole in-world kind of thing. Great storyline, great production behind it, so we'll be finishing that up, and hopefully that'll be out before the end of the year, early 2015, and I'm also going to be filming another movie this summer, which is a little bit of a secret that we'll be doing, and also doing some production with that as well, and that is going to be set for in April 2015, so just keep plugging in on my social media and my websites, and you get all these updates and be able to get involved and see what we're going to be daring to bring to everybody in the years to come.
Wonderful. Well, you keep me posted. I'd love to have the cast back next year when you guys finally have the movie come out, and we'll talk about that, because I know that Stephen Baldwin has actually been very public about you know, how he came to the Lord, and his story is so powerful as well, and many people still haven't heard it. So I just want to thank you so much for sharing. I think we just scratched the tip of but it's wet the whistle, and I'm sure people are going to hit the link. I put the links on my website as well here on Blog Talk Radio, and as you heard, you can definitely find Braxton. He's on Facebook. He's on Twitter. Search him out. He's on Amazon. You can find the materials and really just get them in the hands of your kids, your family, and allow them to be able to experience that. Because here's someone who, you, your story reminds me, and you might have heard this, kind of like Titus, you know, who was raised by his mother and grandmother. Timothy, who was raised by his mother and grandmother, and to start out from meager beginnings, but allow the gifts and the talents that God has placed in you to be able to manifest yourself so that he can be glorified and that you can do great things for him. So thank you so much. I consider you an overcomer. And we're going to go on, out on that next week. We're going to have Tracy Randall with us. He is releasing his next CD called Born a Winner. And Tracy, as many of you know, he is diagnosed with an incurable cancer, but he is living his life to the fullest, and so we will continue to speak with him. Thank you once again, Braxton, and everyone. Let's remember to be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all gave his life for you.
Can y'all help me? Put your hands together. Come on. Can you hear the sound of freedom?
Can you hear the sound of freedom?
We're free because the curse of sin has been broken.
The sin is broken.
And Jesus Christ has